হরিয়ে দয়াল মোরা জয় রাধা নাথ, হরিয়ে দয়াল মোরা জয় রাধা নাথ, বার বার এই বার লো নিজ সাথ, বারো বারো এই বারো লো নিজ সাথ, হরিয়ে দয়াল মোরা জয় রাধা নাথ, বহুজনি ভ্রমিনাথা লোইনু শরণ, নিজ গুণি কৃপা করো অধম তরণ, জগত কারণ তুমি জগত জীবন, তোমাচার কর নাই হেরা ধর্ম, ভুবন মঙ্গল তুমি ভুবনের পতি, ভুবন মঙ্গল তুমি ভুবনের পতি, কি হইবে গতি, হরিয়ে দয়াল মোরা জয় রাধা নাথ, বারো বারো এই বারো লো নিজ সাথ, ভাবিয়া দেখিনু এই জগত মাঝারে,
Thank you.
तुम बिना के हो नाही ए दासे उधारे बिना के हो नाही एदा से उधारे हरिए दयाल मोरा जयो राधा नाथ बार बार यही बारो लो निज साथ हरिए दयाल मोरा जय राधा नाथ बारो बारो यही बारो लो निज साथ हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 10 टेक्स्ट 41 यद्यद् विभूतिमत्सत्वम् श्रीमदुर्जितमेव वा तत्तदेव अवगच्छत्वम् मम तेजो स्वसंभवम् ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद नो दैट ऑल ऑप्युलेंट एंड ब्यूटिफुल एंड ग्लोरियस क्रिएशंस स्प्रिंग फ्रॉम बट ए स्पार्क ऑफ माय स्प्लेंडर Any glorious or beautiful existence should be understood to be but a fragmental manifestation of Krishna's opulence, whether it be in the spiritual or material world. Anything extraordinarily opulent should be considered to represent Krishna's opulence. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः हरे कृष्ण लाइक टू वेलकम एवरीवन टू अवर संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम आई सीक द ब्लेसिंग्स ऑफ ऑल सीनियर वैष्णवस टू मेक व्हाट एवर लिटिल प्रेजेंटेशन आई एम अटेम्प्टिंग टू डू सो दिस वन ऑफ द ब्यूटिफुल वर्सेस इन विच द सुप्रीम पर्सनैलिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड कृष्ण हिमसेल्फ इज स्पीकिंग अबाउट His own opulences. We know that the Supreme Lord, it's called Bhagavan, he possesses six opulences to an unlimited extent. And here he is talking about the projection of his opulences, not only in the spiritual world, but also in the material world. And he says here, know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. So it is impossible to have the full projection of the Lord's opulences in this material world. Not possible. But we can see and experience the sheer splendor of his opulences in this material world. We can see it around us. You see a very beautiful sunrise or a beautiful sunset. You see the ocean waves lashing. You see beautiful mountains. And somehow or the other, your mind becomes peaceful. And you realize that here is a creator whose creation we are experiencing, which we are enjoying. But how much more splendorous the creator himself must be. That idea we get. So, and here Prabhupada is translating this word, avagachatvam. He says that must know. He doesn't say should know, must know. So knowledge about the Lord's splendor, the Lord's opulences is something which we as devotees must know. So there is no exemption from that or etiquette. So we have to know about it. So conditioned living entities placed in this material world, generally we tend to identify ourselves with the body. And most of the time, because of our false ego, we have that kartrutva bhava. You know? We feel that we are the doers. I am this, I am that. I have got prestige. I am handsome, I am strong. So this kind of a feeling we have. Kartaham iti manyate bhav. Whatever. I am the one who is doing everything. But what is our constitutional position? Jivera swarupa hoy krishnera nitya das. So we are just servants of the Supreme Lord. And whatever we are or whatever we have, the source is sarvakarana karanam, Krishna only. Whatever we are, our looks, our possessions, our qualifications, everything that we have is actually comes from Krishna. And it is given by him. And therefore, there is absolutely no need for anyone to develop any false pride out of their looks or their qualifications, out of their wealth or out of their position. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while instructing Sanatana Goswami, gives a very beautiful description. He says, Maya mugdha jiver nahi swata krishna jnan jivera krupaya kaila krishna veda puran. He says that maya mugdha, in fact all of us are maya mugdha. Of course there may be some exalted people, if I am offending them I beg their forgiveness. But conditioned souls by and large are all maya mugdha. And we can be on a proper track only if we revive our Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is there, dormant in every heart. And when we revive that Krishna consciousness, when we have Krishna jan, that jnan, then we are on a proper path or a proper track. But so long as we don't consider ourselves to be servant of the servant of the servant, and we give more importance to our own selves, then we don't have Krishna jnan also. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Nahi swataha Krishna jnana. So we don't have that jnana. Then how do we get that Krishna jnana? So this Krishna jnana will come only from, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Jivere Krupaya Kaila Krishna Veda Puran. So the Supreme Lord himself has created the scriptures, holy scriptures, from which we can get knowledge about Krishna. Otherwise it is just not possible. When we read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, we get knowledge about the Supreme Lord. But who gave that knowledge? Nobody else could have given. He is the source of all knowledge. Vedascha sarver ahameva vedyo. He is to be known by the Vedas. He is the compiler of the Vedas. So all knowledge comes from Krishna himself, and unless he gives it to us, we are not going to have that knowledge at all. So conditioned soul can revive his knowledge of Krishna only by the Lord's grace only, by his causeless mercy, by his causeless compassion. We can generate some knowledge about Krishna, and then slowly and steadily over a period of time we can lose this propensity to think that we are everything, we are karta. We lose that propensity. So maya, basically the illusory energy of the Lord, has the capacity to keep practically everyone under illusion. The poor also are bewildered and the rich are also bewildered. It's not that the poor have no bewilderment, they are also bewildered. And the rich people are also bewildered for different reasons and different conditions. But everyone is bewildered. As I said, no exemption. So everybody is bewildered under some circumstances or some situation or the other. So how to make our lives sublime? This is only possible by developing the required degree of humility in our lives. So long as we don't have humility, there is no question of making our spiritual life sublime. We can be attempting it. So dasatva bhava is very, very important. So eventually, whether one is in an opulent situation, very rich, or whether one is poor, one has to eventually surrender to the Supreme Lord, Krishna. That is the ultimate solution. So it's not that by being very, very rich, by being an Ambani or whatever, Bill Gates, it's that you can control the things around you. Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi are going to oppress you anyway, whatever condition. So it's not by that process at all. It is only by the sublime knowledge about Krishna that we can purify our existence. And the solution is actually to surrender. So that is the ultimate advice of Bhagavad Gita also. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Krishna says that you surrender unto me. So let us briefly discuss about the opulences, rather the fraction of the fraction of the fraction of the opulences that we inherit or get from the Supreme Lord Krishna. And also try to understand who can surrender to Krishna and who cannot surrender to Krishna. So that will be the main theme of today's presentation. I heard Baldev Prabhu's class today morning. He was speaking about Kunti Devi's prayers, and I heard it on the internet. I couldn't come here early. So as he was rattling off one prayer after other prayer, I also started praying to Krishna, because I was also about to talk about Queen Kunti's prayer, and I was hoping that he would not come to the prayer that I'm going to quote in today's class. But believe me, Krishna is merciful. He stopped at a particular stage and then he went into ecstasy over Mahabharata. I said, it's wonderful. Krishna is, you know, protecting me in some way. Anyway, so to be able to understand who can surrender to Krishna and who cannot surrender to Krishna, we have to take shelter of one of the most beautiful verses or prayers of Queen Kunti Devi. So it's a very well quoted verse. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhi Edamana Madapuman Naivarhati Abhidatumve Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So Kunti Devi is very, very categorical here. She very clearly states that if you have high parentage, high birth, you have wealth, or you have high education, or you have beauty, then you tend to develop egoistic attitude, and therefore you are not able to cry out Krishna's names with sincere feeling, which is required, very much required. So Does it mean that high birth, wealth, education, beauty are to be banned from devotee's life? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It is something which we get, which is something which we inherit. Just as, you know, we don't select our parents, right? Do we select our parents, ask them to appear before a selection committee? No, you'll be, no, nothing like that. So we just, we parents are there for us. We just inherit them. Similarly, we cannot expect that we should be born in a high family or a low family. But perchance you are born in a high family. Perchance you have wealth or beauty or knowledge. So unless it is used in Krishna's service, these opulences, these are opulences. Of course, we don't have the same degree of beauty that the Supreme Lord has. His beauty is Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. So we are just nothing. We have whatever opulences we possess in this world are teeny weeny, you know, very, very small. So, no, really, it's like something for science students. I can give a very gross example. You know, it's like a nanogram and you compare it with a ton, you know, something like that. That's also not a proper analogy, but something close, you can imagine. It's like that. Our opulences are of that level. So there is no question of, you know, anybody thinking that he's going to develop pride out of it. So high birth, wealth, beauty and knowledge, unless they are utilized in Krishna's service, they lead to pride. So Queen Kunti Devi actually in this prayer is highlighting that these opulences without Krishna Jnana, that is, what is Krishna Jnana after all? Utilizing whatever we have in service of the Lord, if that knowledge is not there with us, then they can hurt a devotee's spiritual life. There can be setbacks in a devotee's life. So this is important for us to realize. If there is no proper spiritual guidance, these possessions tend to make us puffed up. So a good-looking person or a wealthy person, somehow or the other, he has this tendency or proclivity to develop pride immediately, you know. So he wants to be recognized, he or she, they want to be recognized. Their opulence should be recognized by somebody. Unless that is recognized, they are not happy. Just being beautiful, just having God-given beauty, or just having, you know, God-given power, that doesn't satisfy a human being. It must be acknowledged by third person. And then, you know, okay, yeah, yeah, that's okay. So that is what is required. So to get over all this, we require Krishna Jnana. And if we don't have this Krishna consciousness, this gift of Krishna consciousness with us, then these things which can actually be used in Krishna service are not used in Krishna service. Instead, they are used for self-aggrandizement, and consequently, they lead to aparad. And when we commit aparad, then we cannot progress in our spiritual life. So there is no greater goal, or there is no greater need also in life than to awaken our Krishna consciousness. That is the crying need. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that all the problems in this world are due to lack of Krishna consciousness. So if you have Krishna consciousness, there will be no problems. And it is true. So Kunti Devi is making this statement that it is impossible to cry out sincerely for Krishna. Impossible to feel that love when we have these traces of ego arising out of opulences that we possess. And we find that Krishna, by way of scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, gives us so many examples where these opulences have created difficulties for people. So though these examples are familiar to all of you, so whatever I am narrating is nothing new, still we'll go over some of the examples. In fact, the Bhagavatam is replete with so many examples. We'll consider a few examples of how different, you know, high birth, wealth, knowledge, beauty actually become obstacles, how they lead to aparad. Now, the examples from Srimad Bhagavatam are quite unique. It's not that we can apply those immediately in our lives, but we can definitely learn from these examples. So first of all, we'll talk about the opulence of high birth. The high birth which you are talking about, the one of the most beautiful examples that we can give is that of Sringi. Now Sringi was a highly qualified son of a great Brahmana, Shamik Rishi. And he had attained, though he was very young, he had attained Brahminical powers both by his birth as well as by training. But despite that, he was lacking in spiritual culture. And he was lacking in spiritual culture because he didn't have experience. So when you have experience, you develop some kind of skills to handle situations. But if you don't have experience, you are raw, then you are likely to commit mistakes. So when he saw that his father, Shamik Rishi, was surrounded by a dead serpent, because he was Brahmana, he felt that somebody had really insulted his father. In fact, he insulted his family itself. And he came to know that it is none else but Parikshit Maharaj who had done it. Now, we won't go into why Parikshit Maharaj did all this. We are just discussing the aparad aspect of it. But Parikshit Maharaj did it. It was an event orchestrated by the Supreme Lord himself. If Parikshit Maharaj had not put a snake around Shamik Rishi, there would have been no discussion about Bhagavatam. So eventually Bhagavatam was, spoken to Parikshit Maharaj because of this. He was cursed. So what was the consciousness of this Sringi when he saw that? He straightaway went, his inexperience straightaway led him to think about Parikshit Maharaj as being a Kshatriya and he a Brahmana. So he says, Aho adharma palanam piunam balibhujamiva swamini adhyam yata dasanam dvarapanam shunamiva. He says, oh, just look at the sins of rulers, meaning Parikshit Maharaj, who like crows, balibhujam iva, and watchdogs, dwarapana shunam, perpetrate sins against their masters, contrary to the principles of governing servants. So, very audacious statement from an inexperienced boy. Maybe he had some powers, but very audacious statement from him, because he is talking about the emperor Parikshit Maharaj, who is a pure devotee of the Lord. He saw the Supreme Lord in the womb of his mother. Not an ordinary personality, but he has the audacity to say, make such statement, and he's comparing him to watchdogs and crows. This is audacious. So, because he was so very conscious of his high birth, he committed this aparad. So it is not wrong to be born, in a very high or aristocratic family. So Bhagavad Gita says, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Vrashtu Abhijayate. So this birth is not condemned. But if it is used and it projects egoistic attitude, then something is wrong there. So Sringi comparing Parikshit Maharaj to a watchdog, or it just indicates his false sense of prestige, his false sense of pride. And actually, he is insinuating that Parikshit Maharaj, the emperor of earth, had no right to enter the ashram of Shamik Rishi. He is insinuating that, which is absolutely absurd. So Srila Prabhupada writes in his comments that the downfall of the Brahmana caste began with proud Sringi cursing Parikshit Maharaj to die in 7 days. So the downfall, slide down. The glorious, heritage which the Brahmana community had, it came down because of misuse of Brahminical powers by this, as we would say, chit of a boy, Sringi. Just, he's that. So what it means is he had that, syndrome in his mind that, Brahmanas are masters and Kshatriyas, are servants. So this Brahmana Kshatriya syndrome. So actually all these are eventually designations. Yes, there is Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam. Krishna has created the Chaturvarnya system. But it doesn't mean that there should be no mutual respect. So the Brahmanas should respect the Kshatriyas and vice versa. They respect Brahmanas for their knowledge, and the Brahmanas respect Kshatriyas for their valor, for their chivalry, for their capacity to protect the king and the kingdom. So they worship, they should respect for that. So that is there. So we see that there is no humility. Not all, there is not at all humble Sringi, and therefore he becomes responsible for the degradation of the Brahminical, you know, values. So he is held responsible. So there is no question of Trunadapi Sunichena for Sringi. Huh? So he is what he is. So we find another example like this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I won't go into detail, but there is example of Devyani and Sharmishta. Devyani was the daughter of Shukracharya, and she also suffered from this. She thought that I am a, you know, Brahmana's daughter, and Sharmishta was daughter of a Kshatriya king. And she treated Sharmishta with contempt, lot of contempt. So we find these examples in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll go to the next example, the opulence of, you know, wealth and power. So the most famous example, all of us are familiar, is that of Indra. The most popular example, Indra. Now Indra means lord or king. Indra is the actually the king of powerful demigod. Demigods are very powerful, and he is their king, and therefore he is the ruler of the heavenly planets, and his opulence, his power is mind boggling. You can imagine one who is the ruler of the heavenly kingdom, which is full of opulence. He is the all in all there, and so simply we cannot even imagine his power, we cannot imagine his strength. Now Indra was intoxicated by pride. He thought that the cowherd men of Vrindavan had become intoxicated by pride. See, one who is proud, he thinks that the cowherd men had become intoxicated with pride, and therefore they had stopped performing sacrifice which they were performing over the years, every year. So he became very, very angry. And there is a beautiful verse which talks about his frustration. It says, Vachalam balisham stabdam adnyam pandita maninam krishnam martyam upashritya gopa me chakruhu apriyam. So Indra, he says that these cowherd men acted inimically towards me by taking shelter of whom? This ordinary human being. Ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself to be very, very wise. Pandita maninam. But who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative, vachalam child. Look at the words which Indra is using. Indra is supposed to be. We don't want to say anything against Indra. His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj has frequently warned us against that. And I have to follow the instructions. So, nevertheless, in this context, present context, Indra is using strong words. He is calling him Balisham. He's calling him Dabdam. He's calling him Adnyam. Pandita Maninam. You know, all kinds of adjectives in the wrong sense he's using for Krishna. So, it's almost like he seems to be a perfect example for that famous shloka of Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti ma mudha. Manushim tanuma ashrita. So it looks as though that he's momentarily he's so much bewildered by his opulence that he is virtually placing the Supreme Personality of God Krishna in the category of an ordinary person. He's calling him his Balisha. He's talkative person. Why are these Vrajavasis neglecting to perform sacrifice in my honor on the advice of such a person? So this very scornful statement from Indra, who is a devotee of the Supreme Lord, is really amazing. So from this we can understand that practically everyone can be bewildered, and Indra is bewildered, and what is the direction that his bewilderment takes place? He becomes very, very angry. Becomes very, very annoyed because his sacrifice has been disrupted. So what does he do? He sends forth clouds of universal destruction. He sends Samvartaka clouds to destroy the entire Vrajadham. He wants to inundate the whole thing and wants to kill all the Vrajavasis. Why? Because his pride, you know, he was not given the honor that he thought he deserved. Just for that. So you can see how this the possession of opulence can lead to a very mistaken notion of what honor one should get and how it can lead to real disaster in one sense. So he could not recognize that the lord of the cows, Indra Gavam, it said, Krishna, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. And he is just nothing before the supreme personality of Godhead. So this mistake Indra commits, and in his pride and anger, he creates rain, he creates hail to fall on Gokul, accompanied by lightning, accompanied by powerful winds, and he really brings great suffering to all the people whom Krishna loves very much. So, but what is Lord Krishna's solution for the problem? He doesn't, you know, curse Indra. He doesn't do that. What does he do? He first of all wants to protect his devotees. First instinct is to protect his devotees. And what does he do? Ekena hastena krutva govardhanachalam dudhara lilaya vishnu chatrakam iva balakaha. So just like a small child has no difficulty in plucking out a mushroom and holding it in his hand, in his fingers. Similarly, Krishna uplifted, he just simply lifted the Govardhana mountain, the huge mountain. And what did he do? He invited all his dear devotees, invited everyone, including the cow, the animals, everyone. He said, you come, you take shelter here. So it's not that he, you know, sent some message to Indra. See, Indra, you are nonsense. I am Supreme Personality of Godhead. What are you doing? No. His solution was very simple. He said, I will protect my devotees first. And he protected them. And then what did he say? The Lord then addressed the cowherd community. He said, oh, mother. Verse is very beautiful. Ata aha bhagavan gopan he amba tata vraja okasaha yatha upajesham vishat giri chattam. He said that the Lord then addressed the cowherd community. O mother, O father, O residents of Raj, if you wish, you may now come under the hill with your cows. So this was enough. The very people whom Indra wanted to destroy, he gave them complete protection. Indra could not touch even a hair of a Vrajavasi. Everybody was protected under the Govardhan hill. And it was a glorious occasion for the Vrajavasis because they got the most wonderful association of the supremely beautiful Shyam Sundar for 7 days. So in one sense, you know, Indra did a favor, you know, and he gave association of Shyam Sundar to all the Vrajavasis. So they had wonderful time there. And Indra, by this very thing, Indra felt completely humiliated. His plans were frustrated. It's like, you know, you sending a Brahmastra, you know, to kill an ant, and you know the ant just shifts a little, and you know the Brahmastra goes waste. So all his efforts to hurt the Vrajavasis had failed. So Indra was totally humbled. His pride was totally smashed to smithereens. And His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, while describing this Leela, he says that actually it was Krishna's compassion that he smashed Indra's pride. So when a devotee tends to develop pride out of his so-called achievements, inverted comma, Krishna does something whereby, you know, his pride is totally smashed to smithereens. And that's what happened in case of Indra. So he realized that this person is the supreme personality of Godhead, and you know, I have tried to challenge him, his authority. So he realized that. He felt humiliated, he felt humbled to a great extent. And then actually he became totally ashamed for having dared to insult the supreme personality of Godhead. And having acted improperly, Indra became very, very fearful. So he went to take shelter of Lord Brahma. He said that, you know, I have done this very serious problem. You know, I have tried to insult the Supreme Lord. So, Brahmaji, what do I do now? What is the next course of action? So, Lord Brahma said that only you can be saved by a devotee. So, Krishna loves cows. So, take Surabhi cow with you as a defense lawyer. I'm sorry, I hope I'm not offending lawyers. So, he took Surabhi cow on Brahma's advice to the Supreme Lord. And Surabhi cow represented Indra's case. You can imagine the king, you know, the king of the heavenly, you know, kingdom. He is required to take shelter of a Surabhi cow. And its Surabhi cow represented Indra's case. And then the Lord also, of course, became very, very compassionate. Krishna is always compassionate. Kripa Sindhu. Being Kripa Sindhu. And because he approached in all humility, he actually bowed down, offered his prostrated obeisances, kept his golden helmet near the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and then offered his obeisances. And Krishna, out of compassion, forgave him totally. And when he surrendered in this way, Krishna respected this surrender. So he allowed him to surrender to him privately. It was not a public ceremony, the offering of, you know, surrender. He didn't say that, let all the Brijavasis, you know, come here. And in their presence, Indra, you must surrender. No. He respected Indra. Yes, Indra has committed a fault out of his false ego, out of his mistaken notion that his opulences are supreme. He has committed a fault. But now that he has realized his mistake, now he's asking for forgiveness. I must forgive him. So he forgave him. And then Indra and Surabhi, they offered prayers to the Supreme Lord Krishna. They performed a bathing ceremony for Krishna and they named him as Govinda. So they gave him the name Govinda. So when we go to Vrindavan, we see all these holy places where these things took place. So Krishna became satisfied with Indra's prayers and he told him that, you know, I stopped your Indra Yajna because, you know, you had developed pride. So Krishna has unique ways of, you know, smashing prides of people. So he did it in that way. And actually what happens is that when we are intoxicated by our own opulences, we don't see that destiny, the representative of the Supreme Lord, has got a rod in hand which can, you know, bring down on our head at any time. We don't see that. We just get overwhelmed by our pride and we keep on acting very stupidly at times. And we require, at these moments of crisis, we require spiritual guidance. And then we can correct ourselves and be on the right path. So thus Krishna smashed the pride of Indra. So Krishna is actually the fountainhead of all opulences. And Indra's attempt to show his opulence, his power, you know, to Krishna, it was like showing a lamp to the blazing sun. You know, in month of April, the sun is blazing, blistering heat, and you know, you take out a lamp, you know, and show lamp. See how much light, you know, I'm shedding. Just like that. So our attempts, you know, to impress the Lord or Lord's devotees with our opulences is a very stupid thing. So we should remain away from that. Other examples are there. I don't want to go into all the details, but the example of Nala Kuver and Manigreve is there. So all of you are familiar with that. That is responsible for the Damodar Leela. How Narad Muni cursed these two arrogant sons of Kuvera. And by cursing them, he actually gave a benediction. And eventually, they became trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And they were eventually freed from their existence as trees, and they went back to their whatever kingdom they belong to. So we can understand that the Lord has this uncanny capacity to smash pride of his devotees. So the opulence of beauty. So So this, there is a beautiful story in Krishna book. It's taken literally from Krishna book, borrowed. In fact, everything devotees speak is all borrowed. We are all on borrowed plumes. Nothing is original. Huh? What is original? Nothing is original. Everything comes from the parampara. So once Nanda, Sunanda and other cowherds were spending their night on the bank of river Saraswati. They were strictly observing some vows before they wanted to embark on a yatra. They wanted to go on a yatra. And before that, they came to the bank of this holy river and they decided to spend the night there. So during the night, what happened was that there came a huge and an extremely hungry snake. It appeared, it came from the thicket. You know, they were on the bank, river bank. And from a thicket, this snake came, it just slithered. And then it straight away began to swallow Nanda Maharaj. You know, pythons can swallow totally humans. It's not that they have to bite. They can't bite. They don't have teeth anyway. So they just swallow. They swallowed Nanda Maharaj. And what did Nanda Maharaj do when he faced this crisis? He said, he cried out to Krishna. He said, Krishna, Krishna, Mahanayam. Said, Sarpo mam grasate tata prapannam parimochaya. So he cried out to Krishna. He said that I am in the clutches of this gigantic snake, my dear boy, and this snake is swallowing me. Please save me. I am surrendered unto you. Huh? Nanda Maharaj is saying, prapannam parimochaya. Parimochaya means free me from the clutches of this snake. So Nanda Maharaj is praying to Krishna. So when Nanda Maharaj cried out for help, so all the cowherd men, they got up and they saw right in their presence, this snake, you know, was slowly swallowing Nanda Maharaj. He was entering into the body of the snake. And all of them were watching. What do we do? How do you save Nanda Maharaj? So they began to beat the snake. They took, you know, burning logs and they started beating the snake with that, hoping that when so much torture is inflicted on the snake, you know, will let out Nanda Maharaj. Did not happen. Snake continued its, you know, process, wanted to complete its meal. So it wanted to continue. But thus then, the Supreme Lord Krishna, he appeared on the scene. He appeared there. And what did he do?
Savai Bhagavata Srimata Padas Parshahata Ashubaha Beje Sarpa Vapuhu Itva Rupam Vidyadhara Architam.
So Krishna just came and just gave the snake a kick. Just a kick, small little kick. And what happened? So the snake gave up its body totally. The snake had all his sinful reactions, ashubaha. He gave up all that by the touch of the Supreme Lord's divine feet. And then he gave up his serpent body and appeared in the form of a worshipable Vidyadhara. So, sarpavapuhu hitva rupam Vidyadhara architam. So, he got a body, very, very effulgent, beautiful form of a Vidyadhara. Very, very lustrous, very, very attractive. And he offered his obeisances to the Supreme Lord Krishna and stood before him in all his humility. So Lord Krishna said, my dear sir, you appear to be wonderful. You are glowing, literally glowing with such great beauty. Who are you? And who forced you to assume this terrible body of a snake? Now, one may ask, why is Krishna asking these questions? He knows everything. He is the knower of everything. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani cha arjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashchana. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says this. So he is the knower of the past, present and future. But why is he asking it? No? Why is he asking this question? He wants the Vidyadhara to admit or confess what he had done, to assume this form. It's very instructive. So it's not that that Krishna did not know why he had become a serpent.
He knew very well. But nevertheless, it was his pastime to make this person confess. The serpent replied, he said, I am the well-known Vidyadhar named Sudarshan. I was very opulent and beautiful. I used to wander freely in all directions in my airplanes. And then once I saw the sage in the lineage of Angira Muni. These are words from Krishna book penned by Srila Prabhupada. He says that Rushi Virupa Angirasaha Prahasam Rupa Darpita Taira Imam Prapito Yonim Prabdhai Svena Papmana. He says that I am the well-known Vidyadhar named Sudarshan, and I was very opulent and beautiful. I saw the sage Angira Muni, and proud of my beauty, Rupa Darpitaha, I ridiculed them, and because of my sin, they made me assume this lowly form. So it is one thing to be very handsome and very beautiful, and another thing, you know, to ridicule someone who is not so endowed. It is said that one should never make any remarks on personal features of an individual. It's a very, very, very bad, very big offense to pass comments on somebody's looks. Somebody is a cripple or somebody, you know, walks in a very different way. It's a crime, literally. So we find a similar thing happening in case of in the court of Janak Maharaj, when Ashtavakra Muni, you know, appeared in his court. There is a story that Ashtavakra Muni, he appeared in the court of Janak Maharaj. And when he appeared, he had 8 bends in his body. Therefore, it's called Ashtavakra. And it is said that he developed those bends because when he was in the womb of his mother, his father used to chant the Vedic hymns. And every time he committed a mistake, he would, you know, you know, turn or twist, and that way he got bends, Ashtavakra. Anyway, so he was the spiritual master of Janaka. So people ridiculed him, but Janak Maharaj knew, a pure devotee knows what is right and wrong. He came down from his asana. He actually, with great honor and respect, he made Ashtavakra Muni sit on his throne. He did his Pada Puja, offered him all respect. So ridiculing somebody for his looks is really something very, very bad. And that is what, of course, in school we find, you know, very many times somebody is lame. They will not call him by his name. Say Langde, they will call him, you know. It's quite common. Children can be very cruel at times. So this is how it is. But it's wrong. We have to train them not to do that. So proud of his beauty, he ridicules these venerable sages. And therefore, Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, says, it's a misconception that after reaching the human body, one is never degraded. Now, this person was actually, he belonged to a high category, you know, celestial category. But he commits such an aparad out of, you know, his ego. And it is not that he progressively becomes a human being and then becomes, no. Straight away he becomes a serpent, the lowest creature. So Prabhupada is in a very incisive way telling us, so don't develop the misconception that after reaching human body, whatever you do, next birth also will be human. No. No guarantee. There is no guarantee whatsoever. So we can go down just as we can go up. We can go down also. So it's very, very important instruction which Srila Prabhupada gives. So, but in one sense, this curse which this Vidyadhar received was a benediction. Why? Because he got the transcendental touch of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. So curse becomes benediction. Eventually anything that is connected with Krishna and his devotee become benediction. That's what we find, right? Everything is a benediction. So in one sense, it was a benediction for him. So finally, I would like to speak about the pride that one develops out of educational qualifications. Very often we are very proud of our degrees. You know, this we have this, we have that, PhD, this, that. I remember when I was in the university, I was guarding quite a significant number of research students. So after they submitted their thesis and they gave their defense, you know, viva voce and all that, and they got the degree certificate, they would come with pedas, you know, not prasad at that time, come with pedas and they, you know, offer, you know, namaskar and give pedas. I would tell them, you know, don't think, you know, that just you have got a PhD. This is the first degree in research that you have got. Long way to go. So don't develop, you know, false pride out of this PhD degree. So people develop ego out of whatever they acquire, qualification they acquire. And it is something which can be, it can actually ruin sometimes. Especially for a devotee, it is something very, very important not to develop any false pride. So anyway, here we have the classical example of Roma Harshana Sutta. This is inevitably discussed during Balaram Jayanti by all devotees who speak on Balaram Jayanti day. So I'll repeat it for my purification. And I believe today morning also Baldev Prabhu spoke about Balaram Prabhu, Balaram. So anyway, during the Kurukshetra war, Lord Balaram, he did not take part in the war. He was neutral. And on the pretext of visiting the different holy places, he just left. He was nowhere to be seen in the battlefield. And after bathing at Prabha's Kshetra, Saraswati River flowing westward and eastward, then he went to Bindu Sarovar, then he went to other holy places. And finally, he came, Balaramji came to the holy place known as Naimisharanya, where the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. So when the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters the assembly, there was a person sitting on Vyasasana, and his name was Roma Harshana Sutta. All the sages had collectively elevated him and chosen him to be fit to occupy the Vyasasana. In their wisdom, they had given him that honor. And when Balaramji came, what did all the sages do? There are thousands of sages wanting to hear. All of them, what did they do? Tamagatam abhipretya munayo dirga satrinaha abhinanda yathanyayam pranamya uthayacha archayan. Recognizing that the Lord upon his arrival, the sages who were, you know, engaged in different services for performance of sacrifice for a long time, dirga satrina, they greeted him, abhinandya. How? By standing up, uthaya, or by bowing down, pranamya, and archayan, worshipping him. So this is the legitimate thing to do for everyone. So the sages of Naimisharanya who were involved in performance of sacrifice, they gave up everything that they were doing. And they offered respect to Balaramji, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone in the assembly knew that Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And actually the purpose of education, whatever actually spiritual education that we receive, the purpose is to know who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the crux of the education. So here the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Balaram, enters the assembly. And although he may have appeared on planet Earth as a Kshatriya, Balaramji nevertheless was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore to be adored and to be worshipped. So whereas the sages of Naimisharanya recognized his divinity and stood up to respect him, unfortunately, what they did was they actually escorted Balaram, they gave him a high seat, and when Balaram was seated, he was just looking around and he saw that this personality who was sitting on the Vyasasana, Roma Harshana Sutta, he was sitting very erect. He showed no signs or no semblance of showing any respect. He did not do any gesture which indicated that he had taken note of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Balaram, in the audience. What an offense is it? It is to do this. So you come to a temple and you ignore Radha Gopinath and, you know, just walk out, you know, nonchalantly. That's not done. This is what Rama Maharshi Sutta did. He ignored the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had neither got up from his seat, nor did he offer any respect. One can understand they were sitting on Vyasasana, maybe he did not come down and offer, but it showed, none of his gestures indicated that he had even taken note of the presence, of the divine presence of Balaramji. So, in other words, Rama Maharshi Sutta thought that because he was sitting on the Vyasasana, and therefore it was not very important for him to respect or greet Balaramji. So this is pride that comes because of your learning. Rama Maharshi Sutta was a highly learned personality, learned so many things, learned so many scriptures. And because of that, he had been elevated to sit on the Vyasasana. But that led to destructive pride. So he thought that he is a superior personality, even superior to the Supreme Personality of Godhead who had entered the assembly. And Srila Prabhupada comments, very important comment he makes, that when a person is seated on the Vyasasana, he does not generally have to stand up to receive a particular person entering the assembly. But in this situation, it was a different situation because Lord Baldev is not an ordinary personality. So, a very instructive episode here. So, Rama Maharshi Sutta developed false pride, and then Balaram made comments on him. We won't read the verse, but he said, although he is a disciple of the divine sage Vyas and had thoroughly learned many scriptures from him, including the law books of religious duties of the and the epic histories and Puranas, all this study has not produced good qualities in him. Rather, his study of scriptures is like an actor studying his part, for he is not self-controlled or humble and verily presumes himself a scholarly authority, though he has failed to conquer his own mind. So that education which doesn't make us humble, Vidya Vinayana, we say, always say that, Vidya Vinayana Shobhate. That means one who has real education, one who is who has inculcated spiritual values, his hallmark will be humility. Just as they say that a tree which is laden with luscious fruits will bend. It will be humble. So Balaramji is making a comment that, you know, he has not developed humility. He may have studied, he may have scholarly traits. So intellectual ability does not mean it's not equal to spirituality or it's not equal to spiritual progress. So he had possibly many things he knew, but then when it came to the crux, he did not know. He had so much pride in his heart that he did not respect the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Balaram was not prepared to overlook or condone this misdemeanor from Rama Maharshi Sutta. So he perceived Rama Maharshi Sutta as a hypocrite. Because anyone who is sitting on the Vyasasana, he is supposed to glorify the Supreme Lord. So if he doesn't do that, doesn't glorify the Supreme Lord and just gives, intellectual discourses, his consciousness is not one of glorifying the Lord, then it is so much of wastage of everyone's time. So what did the Lord do? Etavat uktva bhagavan nivrutta asatvadhatapi bhavitva tam kushagrena karastena ahanat prabhu ahanat prabhu. Lord Balaram had not wielded any weapons after he set out on the Tirtha Yatra, his Paryatan. He had not done anything. But what did he do? He took one little blade of kusha grass and just touched this Rama Maharshi Sutta, and Rama Maharshi Sutta was dead. So the Lord doesn't have to use, very complicated weapons to get rid of people. Even Kushagras, one single blade, he got rid of Roma Harshansutta. It's not that he killed him because he did not respect him. He killed him because a hypocrite who is supposed to be a leader, you know, such a person does damage to the entire, you know, spiritual progress of the society. Therefore, he took this harsh action. So Prabhupada writes that if a person does not become meek and humble, all his studies of the Vedas and Puranas, vast knowledge of Shastra are simply outward dress, like the costume of a theatrical artist dancing on a stage. Very strong words, but nevertheless true. So spirituality is not just a facade or a cloak to be worn at a particular time. At this time, you know, I am wearing dress of, you know, a Krishna conscious devotee, you know, and other time, you know, I'll be what I will be. No, that's not allowed. It is in whatever condition we are to be Krishna conscious. So Lord Balaram chastised this person for his hypocrisy, and he corrected the situation. Then of course Suta Goswami, the narrator of Srimad Bhagavatam, was installed in his place. His son only, who was a very humble devotee of the Lord, who had bhakti in his heart. Bhakti combined with knowledge. Only knowledge, you know, if you have, you develop pride. But if a knowledge is combined with bhakti, which gives you humility, then everything is sweet. So knowledge combined with humility is very, very important. So Lord Balaram, being omnipotent, he could kill even with a kushagras. So this is an example where the possession of lot of, you know, knowledge led to pride and eventually led to the downfall. So what is the lesson in all these things for us? Queen Kunti has very beautifully told us the pitfalls of having these opulences. She is not telling us that, you know, one should not be rich or one should not be have beauty. It's not that if you have, if Krishna has given you beauty, you go to a beauty parlor and disfigure yourself. Not that way. But you understand that these are opulences which Krishna has given, and develop humility out of it. So Queen Kunti is emphasizing that the necessary qualification for crying out for Krishna or to develop love for Krishna is becoming a kinchana gochara. So that is the necessary qualification. One of the attributes of being a kinchana gochara is to develop a high degree of humility. His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, one of his quotes is, humility is an ornament which attracts Krishna's heart. Must have read it somewhere or the other. And then he says, japa, bhajana and kirtan are superficial to the extent we are not humble. So humility is one of the most important qualities which we require in Krishna consciousness, and we have to develop it. So I don't think that any class in ISKCON takes place without Trunadapi Suni Chena Tarurapi Sahishnuna Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadaharis. Because it is the very foundation of spiritual life. So one has to develop that humility. So I remember that when His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj was talking about Gajendra Moksha, he was talking about jaws of a crocodile. He said that jaws of a crocodile of Maya, which eventually humbles everyone, whether one is strong, whether one is beautiful, whether one is wealthy, whatever your condition, eventually jaws of Maya can just catch us and humble us in any situation. So we have to recognize that, and we can be free from the jaws of Maya only when we surrender and cry out, Krishna, I am yours. So when we are able to cry out like this, then our spiritual life is successful. So one must not draw the conclusion that akinchana, you know, gochara means, you know, that you should shy away from the opulences which the Lord wants to bestow upon you. You should not shy away from that, because that's not what the Lord wants. Whatever the Lord gives, what we have to develop, try and develop, is akinchana vritti, Our vritti should be, you know, that way. And this is an inherent quality of a pure devotee of the Lord, kinchana vritti. So we find so many beautiful examples that Queen Kunti is the mother of Yudhishthira Maharaj. She's talking about akinchana gochara. And Yudhishthira Maharaj when was the emperor of the earth planet. He had all the opulences which she's talking about. Isn't it? She had everything. The emperor of the earth, he has all the wealth. He had knowledge. He had everything. He was a pure devotee of the Lord. He had everything. Yet, every pure devotee of the Lord has inherent in him this akinchana vritti. This akinchana vritti enables a devotee to instantly withdraw from the opulences that the Lord has bestowed upon him. When Arjuna came back from Dwarka to Hastinapur, Yudhishthira Maharaj was very much worried about him. He was seeing all kinds of omens, ill omens, and in the heart of his heart he was thinking that maybe Narad Muni's prediction that the Lord is going to wind up his pastimes is going to come true. So we are seeing all kinds of symptoms, and then when finally Arjuna came completely broken down, completely desolate, completely unhappy, not even able to communicate, but finally when it was communicated that Lord Krishna had indeed wound up his pastimes on planet Earth, what did Yudhishthira Maharaj do? Instantly he could detach himself from his empire, he could detach himself from all his family members, he could detach himself, he installed his successor, and then Parikshit Maharaj, and then just walked out. So it's not that akinchana vritti is the prerogative of only one who is materially exhausted. Kunti Maharani is saying that one should be materially exhausted. But even while possessing everything, one could be materially exhausted. We have an example of Yudhishthira Maharaj. We similarly have example of Parikshit Maharaj himself. When he came to know that he is going to die in 7 days, 7 days' time, he immediately withdrew. He could instantly detach himself. So what does it mean that he had that akinchana vritti also? He, material things no longer attracted him. All that he wanted was, you know, to seek solace of the Supreme Lord, arrive at, you know, get shelter of his lotus feet, and he was willing to surrender to his spiritual master, Shukdev Goswami. So that is possible. So there are so many examples. We have example of Bharat Maharaj, who had all the opulences Kunti Maharani is talking about, but instantly detached himself, went to the forest. So thus, this akinchana vritti is very, very important. So by grace of our spiritual master and by grace of Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, all of us have received this wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness. We have been given an easy process of being on this path, simply chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. As His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj has been telling us time and again, all that we have to do is to be trying to be sincere, serious, and have no ulterior motives. So I beg all of you to give me the benediction that I can be sincere, that I can be serious, and that I have no ulterior motives in whatever I do. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. If anybody has any comments or any questions, please feel free. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.